the Gilded Age. Perhaps you've heard some people talking about it. And we're going to add a couple of ingredients to the Gilded Age. It's irony, I guess, because it certainly could not be timing. I mean, it takes a long time to put together a television series, and it takes a long time to write a book. And the name of the television series is The Gilded Age, and the name of the book is Greed in the Gilded Age, The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick. And I'm pleased to have with us again author William Elliott Hazelgrove. Good evening, William, and welcome back to WGN.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You betcha. We're going to spend the entire hour discussing not just this book, but
sure.
the era in which it's set, and also some comparisons with some other popular culture streaming television programs that are on right now. Okay, so we have The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age. Why don't we start out by well, first of all, if you're saying, let me backtrack.
Sure.
Yes, this is the same person who I talked to about Sally Rand, American sex symbol. Yes, this is the same person I talked to about Morristown, the kidnapping of George Washington. Yes, this is the same person I talked to about 160 Minutes, the race to save the Titanic. This is the guy. So, you know, I don't think I've read that many books by one author since maybe James Bond, Ian Fleming, when I was
right,
a teenager.
Crazy, you know?
Yeah. You're coming out with these books like once every 3 months. You're very prolific, you know?
Yeah. I drink a lot of coffee. actually, it was due to the pandemic because what happened was I had a lot of contracts before that, and the publisher, everybody went on furlough. So basically, they kind of shut down. So I was like, well, I'm just going to, you know, write these books. So, you know, everybody is locked down. I'm like, all right, let's do this.
Right.
And then, you know, I gave them to them, and usually they space them out. Well, you know what? They wanted to make up for lost time. So they've just been just pushing them out there like, you know, cereal boxes.
Well, they're excellent. All of them are excellent. I've enjoyed every single one of them. This one included. In fact, this one is far more complex in its storytelling, I think, because the person at the center of the story is such a brilliant con artist and has so many different names in so many different places in the United States. It's very hard to keep track of her, even in the book, let alone if you were around at that time. But let me back up to my first question. Let's identify what is exactly the Gilded Age?
Actually, it's an age from, I would say, 1865, the end of the Civil War, to the sinking of the Titanic in 1912, which, of course, as you know, I wrote that other book.
Right.
And so Mark Twain coined it. He said, you know, he wrote a book called The Gilded Age. And what is The Gilded Age? He compared it to, say, a banister of wood, old wood, with a gold patina over the outside.
Right.
So it's rotten underneath, but this is gold on top.
Right. And when we spoke earlier about and this is also a time in history where the wealth of the country is concentrated into a very small percentage of the population, and everybody else can sort of fend for themselves, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and so what happens between those two marks, 1865 and 1912, America just caught on fire. Suddenly, all those rail lines that we had laid to move troops around, they could use for a national market. So you didn't just go sell your corn in your local town. It was now going to New York, right? So what did that bring? That brought this mega industrialization where suddenly Americans were starting to sell their time for wages. And this was something new. So what did this do? This concentrated up an immense amount of wealth and, you know, a few men, Carnegie being one of them, J.P. Morgan another. And so for the first time, we just had these people who made immense amounts of money off people they'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the robber barons. And, you know, cutting to what you were talking about, the Gilded Age, that show, we had this incredibly rich, nouveau riche moneyed class that, you know, again, the 1%, and then there was everybody else.
Speaking, were you aware of the Gilded Age coming on HBO as a series?
No, I was not. I mean, you know, I was like, wow, here, you know, this is great because it, you know, a lot of people are now curious about the Gilded Age.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And it is a fascinating time because, you know, Thomas Jefferson had an agrarian view of the country. Alexander Hamilton had this view that we would become this industrial, you know, monolith and with a very strong banking system. And so he really sort of won out in the end. You know, that's what we became. And yet, you know, this, and we're going to segue a little to Kathy Chadwick, this sort of pot of gold that seemed to be over the next hill for everybody, it was mostly an illusion for most people, except the few who really went after it.
And those were, as you mentioned, Carnegie, J.P. Morgan.
Right. Vanderbilt. These people who just you had this amazing amount of untaxed money.
Untaxed this, money. Wow.
I mean, no taxes at all. So it was just, you know, and in the Gilded Age, you have all these families that come to New York.
Right.
And the landed people there, the wealthy that have been there a while, are just sort of horrified that these people have all this money. Well, again, there's a girl named Elizabeth Bigley, who's in Canada, who sees it from afar. And she's poor. Her father works for the railroad. And she, you know, sees America as this place where she can, you know, the streets are lined with gold.
Mm-hmm.
And so she comes up with her first con. I don't want to jump the gun too much here, but her first con is she takes a card and she puts on it that she's an heiress due to inherit $15 million. Takes her mother's dress, dresses herself up, puts on some perfume, makes her own hat, puts some shoes that don't look too bad, and walks into a bank. Now, this is the time when banks lent in a very different way. You know, today we go through credit checks and all this stuff, and it takes forever. This is at a time when a banker could make an on-the-spot decision if they thought that person was wealthy. And so she was very adept, all right? This girl, she's 20-something, and she was very adept at understanding complex financial mechanisms, but also understanding, you know, sort of human greed, because banks also expected a kickback from every loan. You know, today that's illegal. But then, if say you got a loan for $90,000, they expect you to give them back $10,000 right there. So
and
she went. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead after you.
Yeah, sure. So she. So she goes to this bank. Amazingly, she walks out with a book of checks with a credit line off a little business card. But they perceived her as being wealthy. She understood that. If these men perceived her as this woman, and again, women are second-class citizens, they don't have the vote, you know, they aren't in business. And so she walks out, papers the town with bad checks, gets caught, and, you know, they have a trial, and they say basically, you know, she's crazy. That's the one thing they said. And the second thing, he says, we would like her to leave, and she goes to America.
All right. So we're going to take a break and come back and do some more. In fact, we're going to do it for the rest of this hour with William Hazelgrove, the author of The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age. And the thing that just blows my mind is how this book just plops right down in the middle of that TV series that's on HBO. I mean, this could be like a sidebar episode or something. This could be one of the characters. Because those people were so arrogant. They were so, I mean, if the TV show is correct in portraying how the upper class viewed the world, I mean, they were unbelievably wealthy, and all they cared about was their social status. I mean, it's really astounding. More when we come back. John Landecker at 720 WGN at 821. If you're just joining us, we're talking with William Elliott Hazelgrove, a great author of a great book called The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age. And as we mentioned earlier, the irony of having a television program, a very popular one, by the way, on HBO called The Gilded Age, and this book, Greed in the Gilded Age, it's almost like a marketing campaign. But no, they are totally separate. Have you seen any of the television series?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I've watched it. And, yeah, they do a great job of portraying this sort of mega wealth we were talking about and how there's this massive change going about and how some people are horrified by it and, you know, everybody wants it. And into that, you know, setting the stage sort of for our Cassie Chadwick,
right.
She comes into this saying, wow, I want this, right? Now, and she's very, very adept at changing herself. So she stays with her sister. Immediately, she goes and hawks her sister's furniture, you know, for money. She gets thrown out of her sister's house. And so then she starts to sort of do a series of different things. But she creates this persona of this, you know, again, this rich heiress. And mm-hmm. she bumps into a guy named Dr. Chadwick. And Dr. Chadwick has rheumatism, and Cassie's opened up sort of the equivalent of a massage parlor. And he goes there, and he's really taken with her. And she tells him, you know, I'm wealthy, you know, my money's all in Ireland and all this. Well, he is wealthy, and he lives on Millionaire's Row in Cleveland. And he needs a wife. His wife has died because he's got a daughter and a mother who's living with him. And so they get married. And, you know, so now this drifter from Canada has really landed in the lap of society, you know, at this time. And you know, she has servants, she has multiple cars, but she really sets her eyes on something bigger. And that's Andrew Carnegie. And what she does is she goes to New York, meets this guy named James Dillon, a lawyer, and trains her, say, can you give me a ride to my father's house? He's like, sure. They go to Fifth Avenue, pull up in front of the Carnegie Mansion. This guy's jaw drops open. She goes, I'll be right back. She goes inside, talks with the maid for a little while, kills some time, walks back out, and drops these trust papers in the carriage. Well, Dillon picks them up and sees them, and she says, oh, you know, I got to tell you a story you can't tell anybody. I'm Andrew Carnegie's illegitimate daughter, and I'm due to inherit his entire fortune. And this guy is a financial lawyer plugged into the financial. She says, don't tell anybody. And, of course, Dillon, as she knows, tells everybody that this woman is going to inherit Andrew Carnegie's fortune.
And all she needed to do, I think we've got to sure. make this abundantly clear, for this woman to pull all this stuff off, if you can believe it, all she had to do was look the part and have a written piece of paper that backed her story. And that was it. And if the banker or whoever was the mark bought into that, she got money. I mean, it's just unbelievable for me to think that that's all it took, because we're heading towards a con that in today's dollars would probably be about $100 million. And
right.
Now, what is her, even I get confused. There's so many names that she assumed, so many
right.
personas. What is her original name?
Elizabeth Bigley.
Right.
That was
okay.
her real name.
Her
right.
name is Elizabeth Bigley, and she's from Canada.
Right.
And she does this one con in Canada, and they ask
right.
her to leave Canada. They don't, I guess they don't put her in jail. She comes to the
right.
United States, and she becomes Cassie Chadwick at the, with the marriage.
Right. Well, yeah, actually, and, you know, between all that, she becomes a clairvoyant, Madame de Vere. And this is a time when everybody sort of, because secularism was moving into America, people were sort of confused, and they
yeah.
wanted people who could talk to the dead. And so,
yeah.
you know, full price, people come in, pay her, and she'd talk to the dead. And while she's doing this, she then opens a massage parlor. It has a lot of connotations today. It didn't then.
Right.
Everybody had rheumatism and all this stuff. So, and then she meets Chadwick. And you're right. She had this ability to understand, you know, sort of complex things, because the trust that she wrote, that these bankers would look at, the inherent mm-hmm. documents would show inherit, were mm-hmm. complex. You know, were very complex. I mean,
oh,
they
so
ended
these
up
were actually like documents. They weren't
these
just
were, a, this is a trust. Yeah, you know how
right,
you would
right,
say
right.
These were very complex trusts that she wrote, and so she was very smart that way. Now this is if we I don't know how much time we have until the next break.
About 4 minutes. 3 minutes.
Okay, good. But we can get this one in then. Okay, so
okay.
So what she does is she triangulates, all right? She understands how this is going to work. And so she goes to a guy named Reynolds, who owns the Wade Park Bank. And she goes, listen, I I have to tell you a secret. So she tells him the Carnegie secret, and then she hands him a package and says, in there is $15 million worth of securities. I just need you to give me a line of credit on that. And he looks at the package. It's all tied up. And he said, well, maybe I should look at this. And she goes, do you doubt my word? And he says, oh, I would never doubt the word of a lady.
Yes.
And she walks out with a note of credit for $15 million. And this guy goes and sticks the package unopened into a safe.
Wow. Unbelievable. Was there something about her appearance? Her physical appearance?
Yes. That's a great question.
That got these guys on her side?
Yes. She had a very strange aura. They said her eyes were hypnotic, and she had very small white animal teeth, and she spoke with a lisp. And so men would lean close to her. She had a good figure. She was good looking. But she had this aura about her. And some later bankers claim she hypnotized them. I mean, that's what some of these guys were saying. But, you know, she understood how to use men's greed against them.
Yeah.
Because they killed her with interest rates. There was like 30% interest rates with kickbacks.
Right. So these bankers thought that when they would give out this loan, they would get the loan back plus this exorbitant interest and also a little extra on the side, correct?
Well, and what they really thought was they'd get the Carnegie Million.
Oh, right. Eventually, sure.
That was the carrot.
Yeah, we're heading for the Carnegie fortune here with his quote unquote illegitimate daughter. And how do we know she's illegitimate? Because she said so.
Right.
That's about it. All right, stay on the line there. This book just blew my mind. This is not fiction. This is the real deal, although I can certainly see this as a movie. The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age by William Elliott Hazelgrove. And we're going to talk to him again during the next half hour. And I've mentioned the Gilded Age television show on HBO. And as I was getting ready to do this interview, something else occurred to me that is currently a very popular streaming program that, in my opinion anyway, has somewhat of a connection with what we're talking about, although not intended. And we'll get to that when we come back. 720 WGN, that's the tie-in that I've been waiting for. We're talking to William Hazelgrove. He has a great book out called The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age, about a woman from Canada who came to the United States and claimed to be the illegitimate daughter of Andrew Carnegie, one of the richest men in the world, and changed her identity multiple times. And before she was caught, built people out of what would have been $100 million in today's money. And I think that the parallel between her and Anna Delvey, which is the subject of the Netflix series Inventing Anna, has obvious parallels in the sense that they are both women who came to the United States with false pretenses and were somehow able to con bankers out of millions and millions of dollars. So I guess in a certain sense, history repeats itself to a certain degree. So we've got this woman who comes here from Canada, whose real name is Elizabeth Bigley, and she's in the United States, and she's convinced bankers, or a banker, that she is the illegitimate daughter of Andrew Carnegie because she took him to Carnegie's house, went inside, spoke with somebody for a while, came back out, and had trusts worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that the banker bought the story and gave her the money. But that's just sort of the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, she basically is like checkers. She uses one bank against another.
Yeah.
So then she goes to a guy named Beckworth, who's this staid 19th century banker who for 25 years has steered his bank in a very conservative fashion. She goes there one night, and the guy named Spears is with Beckworth, and she tells him this incredible story of how she's the illegitimate daughter of Andrew Carnegie, and she wants to take all his money when she inherits it and give it to Beckworth and his bank, the Oberlin Bank. Mm. And Beckworth can't believe this. And so he immediately says, you know, I'll give you whatever line of credit you need. And he immediately lends her more than is in the bank. All right. So he basically, and there's no FDIC.
Right.
And it gets worse. He then lends her $100,000 of his own money. So when this all blows up, And by the way, it becomes the trial of the century. When this blows up, the Oberlin Bank collapses, and all those people are out their money. And this is really the only thing that got Cassie Chadwick. And the book opens in a great scene in New York where she's being chased by all these Treasury agents. And when they finally catch up to her, she's in a bed at a very luxurious hotel. And there's this agent decorum, and the sheriff, a big burly guy, goes in there and says, "Madam, I have unpleasant duty. I have to arrest you." And she says, "But I'm sick. I'm laying in bed." He goes, "Well, this is unpleasant for me, so I will wait outside until you feel better." I mean, you know, it's just, and she understood that decorum. So anyway, so the Oberlin Bank collapses, and this is really what gets the government involved, because all these people are out money. And when she's, you know, when they have this trial, Carnegie is pulled in. So Andrew Carnegie, the richest man in the world, is pulled into this trial of essentially a drifter. And he confronts her in court. And, you know, he writes about it later. He says, you know, and Carnegie was an interesting guy because he never quite understood how he made all this money. He actually took a year off and wrote a book called Wealth, where he actually said it wasn't because he worked so hard. It's because he was at the right place at the right time. And so he's looking at this woman, and, you know, suddenly he realizes, oh, she's me. She's as ruthless as I am.
Right.
You know, and he has a sort of epiphanic moment. But you know, she was as ruthless as he was. And, you know, so poor Beckworth, he actually died before the trial. This banker, he says, he's so broken. And, you know, when this whole thing unravels, and she's actually charged with just conspiracy, which is actually to defraud a bank, which was basically passing bad checks. But what she would do is she would take, you know, the approval of one bank, go to another bank in New York, and say, "Lend me the money."
Well, if I've got this right from reading the book, not only did she go from one bank and go to another bank in New York, but it seems to me that when she was in Cleveland, she'd go from one side of Cleveland to the other side of Cleveland and change her name and get more money without leaving town.
Right.
Which was, to me, was an incredible situation where, to show you how the machinery of law enforcement and money during the Gilded Age was just basically word of mouth, and who did you believe? And there was no way of tracking people. And she'd literally steal from one bank on the side of Cleveland, change her name, go to another one, and get some more money. I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. And you said it was the trial of the century. How come we've never heard of this person? Or at least I haven't.
You know, it's one of those bet you didn't know stories. But here's the thing. I had to build this from newspaper articles.
Right.
And there's thousands of them. This was the story of 1904, 1905, 1906. Mm-hmm. And it pushed the inauguration of Teddy Roosevelt off the front pages of all the papers.
Wow.
Because people thought she might be his daughter.
And there's no media coverage, there's no internet, there's no follow-up, nobody's investigating. In fact, probably in one part of the country, they don't even know she's saying it in another part of the country. I mean, nobody's connected in the sense that they are now, and she's just pulling this off, changing names one right after the other, and bilking people out of, as I said earlier, what probably is, in today's dollars, $100 million. It's 8:45. Yeah. John Landecker at 720 WGN, talking with William Hazelgrove, the book, The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick. That was just one of her names, by the way. Greed in the Gilded Age, and we'll do some more when we come back. Only we're talking about greed in the age of, in the, I'm getting confused on my ages and my guilds and my greed. Greed in the Gilded Age, The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick. That's not her real name, but the author is William Elliott Hazelgrove, who's with us here at 8:50 at 720 WGN. So we've got this young woman who gets here from Canada, takes on some false identities, claims that she's the illegitimate daughter of Andrew Carnegie, falsifies a bunch of trust papers and legal documents, and gets banks to give her millions, literally millions of dollars in today's money. Do you know why she, how did she pick Andrew Carnegie? Where did that idea come from, you know?
You know, I think she just went to the top.
Yeah.
She actually did a little jail time, though, where your listeners read the book, you'll find out. And she became very bitter, and she felt men of power had put her there. Mm-hmm. So I think when she came out, you know, why wasn't Chadwick's money enough? Well, poor Chadwick, she cleaned him out. She would go on these sprees where she'd buy five pianos and go to Europe and all this stuff. And, I mean, she was just, you know, insatiable in terms of just her spending. And then she actually went to this pastor named John Eaton, who, you know, had ties to the Rockefellers, and she used him to get her to a guy named Newton, who lent her $200,000. Well, Newton was her Achilles heel because she couldn't pay him back, and when she couldn't, he sued her, and that's when the whole thing unraveled, and he realized she had all these loans all over the place. And well, she was in debt for millions.
And she was married two or three times, wasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. And she had a son, you know, who was actually with her at the end and stayed with her all through the trial. And you know, and here's the thing. Beckworth and Reynolds, these guys whose lives was destroyed, these sophisticated bankers, even at the end, they believed that she was who she said she was and that she would somehow pay it all off. Even when everybody said, no, she's a con,
they
couldn't believe that they'd been conned. And they all believed that a man was involved. They didn't think a woman could was
of
smart
course.
Enough to pull this off.
Oh, we all know that. Come on now. That's a little lady here. She's a little lady. She couldn't possibly come up with an idea this complicated.
Well, and you know, your allusion to Inventing Anna, which is a great comparison because the plot line of that is a modern-day woman
yes.
who says her father's wealthy.
Exactly.
Her father's wealthy, and she's going to pay everybody off, and she gets all these people to lend her millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
This happened 115 years before.
Right. That's what I'm watching.
Chadwick.
Yeah, this is the thing that... That's exactly the idea that got into my brain watching Anna and then reading the book at the same time. I'm like, wait a minute. These two stories have a lot in common. They're just in different eras. What was the exact what year did she start? How long did it last? And when did she go to jail?
She really had quite a run. I mean, she married Chadwick in the early 1900s, and they didn't really catch up to her until about 1906. And so, you know, then the trial hit. And that was a media sensation. I mean, that was it. It was just, I can't tell you how many front page articles there were on it. And, you know, when they finally convicted her, this was big. She was going to jail for 11 years.
Did she ever get out of jail or did she
die? No,
she
died within the first 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She really just sort of fell apart. She was actually deaf in one ear. And when the judge said, you know, she was guilty. She said, oh, great, I got let off. And her lawyer said, no, Miss Chadwick. He said you were guilty.
Yeah.
You know, she just couldn't hear him.
How many different names did she use
over
the course
five,
of that day?
Probably five or six.
No,
you know,
she
would just, you know, she would go...
Madame
right.
Devere.
Madame Devere. She was Mrs. Springstone. She was Cassie Chadwick. And there's two other that she used in there. But
Linda
as you
Hoover?
Said in the beginning, and yeah, Mrs. Hoover, you said in the beginning, there's no Social Security number.
Right.
You could just change your name. It will.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't print checks. I mean, you didn't have a credit card. And of course, there's no driver's license. And there's no taxes. So
right.
it's this age that we're talking about, too. It's this gilded age. It's this age of unbelievable wealth on the top 2% of the American population and everybody else sort of fending for themselves. And not only did that 2% have the money, they were arrogant. They were greedy beyond belief. They had no scruples. They didn't care about their workers. They were prime for somebody who had this kind of thought process and came in there and fleeced him, just fleeced him. So it was this lawsuit in the end that brought her to trial. Is that what you said?
Yeah. This guy named Newton, he hired a detective who uncovered that she had just tons of loans that she was in paying. And so then, you know, the government got involved because she defrauded the Overland Bank, and then she went to trial. And, you know, it seemed for a while she might actually be able to get off. But again, when Carnegie came, it was incredible. You know, Carnegie was only 5 foot tall. He looked like a mini Santa Claus. And he was besieged with reporters. They came to his mansion. They wouldn't leave him alone. And they kept saying, is she really your daughter?
Yeah.
And he's like, that's absurd.
Well, thanks for being with us. It's been great. I can't wait till the next book. William Hazelgrove is the author. The book we're talking about is The Brilliant Con of Cassie Chadwick, Greed in the Gilded Age. Thanks so much for being with us. I love the book.
Thanks for having me, John.
You betcha.